It's Sunday, the 12th of April 2015 in Riyadh, Saudi Arabia. Sunday's a normal working day here, so the traffic's heavy this morning and all the building sites, of which there are many around the hotel, are in full operation, and the conference starts in about 30 minutes' time. After a couple of presentations, then there's an official opening by the Saudi Minister of Health, the new Saudi Minister of Health, because the previous one was sacked or left a couple of nights ago, apparently. And I give a presentation at 11:45, and then I'm essentially free for the rest of the day until 8 o'clock when we have a gala dinner at the Ritz-Carlton Hotel. Get these slides up. Okay. Good. And they're working. Right, thank you very much for the invitation to the Commission, and especially to James Ware for specifically inviting me here to talk about ethics. I always assume when somebody asks someone to talk about ethics that something's gone wrong, but I don't know if that's the case. You can maybe tell me afterwards. My particular interest is in publication ethics, and I'm going to talk about that a little bit at the end. If I started with that, I probably wouldn't get much beyond it. But I'm going to look at various aspects of ethics as I go through. And I realise that I'm the second last speaker, and I'm dangerously close to separating you from your lunch, so I'll try not to go over time, but you will let me know in about 25 minutes or so if I've gone on too long. So ethics is essentially about integrity and about trust. Ethics works by people agreeing on a code, essentially, despite their many differences. And people can agree. So where do ethics apply? Well, I'm going to look at several areas where ethics might apply. Look at these very, very separately. First of all, ethics apply with patient care decisions, obviously. That's what the majority of people in this room, I'm sure, are concerned with. And by the way, I'm a nurse, and most of the people here, I think, are doctors. And many people talk about medical ethics and nursing ethics and the social work ethics and things like that. I really think it's really wrong-headed and quite destructive to try and talk about a particular kind of ethics. I think really there are just ethics or healthcare ethics. We need a more general framework. If we start talking about medical ethics and nursing ethics, then a nurse can say, well, that actually doesn't apply to me because this is my ethical code. I think we need to find a common ethical code that covers different professions. I'm going to look at patient care decisions and one or two of the decisions which I think make a difference from where I come from, because a patient would always know the diagnosis. So I'm not being critical, it's just a different perspective, but it's a different ethical perspective. A patient asks, are they dying? In these patients who are patently dying, none of them appeared to know it. They may well have guessed it, but it had never been actually answered straightforwardly to them in answer to that specific question, which is worrying because people need to prepare to die. So again, that's an ethical perspective. And will I get better? I mean, many of these patients were being told, I was asking, what was that? What were they saying in Arabic there? And they were saying, you'll be up and about in no time at all, you'll be back home. And patently, they were never going to do that. So, it was quite a challenging thing to be assessing students in that situation. And, of course, how long will I live, which, of course, is related to am I dying. People need a best guess estimate on that if they're ill. So, as I say, there are differences in how people approach this, and I'm not saying our way is right, I'm just saying our way may be different, but certainly when you're working as involved in research. So with specifically to research, respect for autonomy comes out very practically in the notion of informed consent. If people are going to enter into research, I'm sure you know this, they need to have informed consent, they need to have information about the project, they need to be given full information about what taking part means, and the information must be for a wide reading ability. We're not addressing university graduates all the time. We need to make sure that people understand it. We can't have people signing informed consent form if we don't think they understand it. So it must be written in non-technical language. So those are very practical outcomes of the Beauchamp and Childress framework. And it has to explain what's good and what's bad about taking part. Informed consent also means consent that people actually say they want to take part prior to their participation, unless they come under a framework where people don't have autonomy. And consent, if possible, should actually be affirmed in some way so that it can be audited and proved. And people should be able to come out of research projects without prejudice to their treatment. If they're being treated by the consultant, all sorts of problems in the future, people get missed off. Plagiarism is a huge issue. It ranges from unreferenced use of others' material, but also using grant applications or simply stealing other people's ideas. I could be here for a long time talking about plagiarism, but I won't. But it's a very big issue, and it may occur at any stage in a research process. So you need to have processes in place, and having a research meeting regularly is one way that you can avoid this. And having a decision at the beginning, who's going to write the papers, what's going to be the content of the papers, what are going to be the sources. You need to be very deliberate about this. Believe me, I've seen careers ended through plagiarism and duplication. You don't want to get yourself into that situation. And finally, conflicts of interest. These are ethical as well. This is a huge issue, conflicts of interest. We could be here for a lot longer talking about it. But anything which could lead to an undue influence on you publishing a piece of research, for example, being funded by a drug company or being funded by an organisation, these things are not wrong, but they have to be declared. And you have to be careful. It's not just actual things that may happen. It's things that may give the impression. You'll learn a lot there. There are codes of practice for authors, editors, and reviewers, and for publishers, founded by the BMJ and the Lancet editors, Richard Smith and Richard Horton. So, finally, thanks very much for bearing with me for half an hour. Do ethics make a difference? Well, yes, absolutely. There's no doubt that they do. I could have answered that very quickly at the beginning, and I'm sure that James asked me to do that, to give this talk with that in mind. So what I would urge you to do is to keep calm and make ethical decisions. Do right and don't do wrong. And if you want to keep in touch with me afterwards, or if you've really got nothing else to do, you can follow me on Twitter. Thanks very much indeed. Not much to report today. I gave my paper, as you heard, at the conference. Seemed to go down fairly well, although it was a fairly superficial look at ethics. But it did get quite a debate going and had quite a few discussions with people tonight as a result of it. Tonight we went to the Ritz-Carlton, probably a 6-star hotel, for dinner. And we were shown the Royal Suite upstairs, which was quite sumptuous. I've never really seen anything like it. I haven't seen gold-plated taps before. These people live a level of luxury that you really can only imagine. So that's another day over. Tomorrow I've got nothing at the conference until the evening, when we've got a meeting with resident doctors and nurses to discuss careers.
And then in the evening, we go out for dinner, the speakers who remain. I believe it's a seafood restaurant, which I won't be looking forward to, but hopefully they will sell something other than seafood. The dust here, as you may be able to tell from my voice, is really quite overwhelming. Everything gets covered in a thin film of dust all the time. You're constantly wiping your iPhone, your iPad, working surfaces, and the keys of your laptop. But what's worse is you're constantly having to just take sips of water and cough all the time because of the dust in your throat. And I don't even really think the locals get used to it. I noticed our guide yesterday was coughing constantly. It's quite difficult and very, very dusty all the time here. I believe in Jeddah it's going to be very clear and it's going to be quite cool. So I'm looking forward to getting down there on Tuesday.